Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dom, I got to declare this a disappointing weekend for football. The Badgers lost. The Packers lost. And even if you're a Vikings fan, you lost your quarterback, probably for the season, maybe a career-ending Achilles injury to Kirk Cousins. And of course, the Bears still suck. They're the only team in the division worse than the Packers right now.
Packers, you know who didn't lose, Curdy? The mighty Lions. Hear them roar playing tonight, Monday Night Football. Go Lions.
Yes, yes. Go Lions. Yeah. You know, the only good news in sports, as far as I was concerned this weekend, UW lacrosse. You know, our Eagles, we're alumni of this fine university and football factory in Western Wisconsin. They're ranked number 4 in Division 3 right now, man. They smoked Eau Claire this weekend. No offense to our blue-golder friends, but 59 points they put up.
Damn.
And I went up to God's country this weekend. I was up there, so I'd like to think I brought a little of that luck.
Why didn't you do that to, you know, I don't know, Madison for the Badgers or Green Bay for the Packers, man? It was all the Crudy mojo rolling into lacrosse, man.
Apparently, I used all the good stuff up in God's country, Dom. I took the youngest Crudy. You know, he's considering following in his papa's footsteps.
Well, he may want to consider a name change.
Just in case the wanted posters are still up.
I'm just saying. He's about as tall as you, man. He's getting big, these kids. He's got much more hair, though. Oh. And, you know, he's better looking. He's got Liza's side of the family.
Yes, yes. He's got all those things going for him. But he's got the Crudy wit and brain, right? And he's not a half bad salesman. He's working on it. But Dom, anyways, went up to lacrosse, had a good time, skipped the Packer game, listened to it on the radio. Mostly civic media coverage. Listened on WRCO 100.9 FM. But I'm glad I didn't watch much of that game, Dom. That was hard to watch. That was terribly hard to watch. I actually found the Badger game against Ohio State on Saturday night. And it's always, God, man, we haven't beat Ohio State in so freaking long. And I hate Ohio State. Did I ever mention that?
Just once.
Really, amongst all the Big Ten schools, there's only one I hate. And it's Ohio State. It's the Buckeyes. And they come into town. And they didn't hand us our asses like I was kind of expecting after last year's blowout. But still, Dom, you know, late in the game, a little bit of a chance. No chance.
No chance.
Ohio State, just the better team. Still, for the last 13 years. Now, we haven't played them each and every year, but, you know, we haven't beaten them since 2010, I believe.
Whew.
Yeah, that sucks. Indiana, we'll get healthy this Saturday morning, 11 o'clock. Indiana. Although, Braylon Allen may be out, our tailback. Add him to the mix of players that are injured. And Middleton High School lost. Congratulations, Verona. They played a hell of a game Friday night. But, you know, where my son attends, they're done. They're done for the year. So I guess we're just stuck talking about politics now.
That's right, man.
Very little sports to enjoy or commiserate about at the water cooler on Monday morning. So let's get into the politics. And Governor Tony Evers filed a brief, right, amicus brief in the Wisconsin Supreme Court in the redistricting case. And Channel 3000's got some coverage at this hour of this, Dom. So let's start there. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call are calling on the state Supreme Court to throw out the current legislative maps as part of a response brief filed Monday. Evers issued a short statement on social media after the brief was filed, saying he wanted the current maps to be ruled unconstitutional. I share that sentiment, Governor Evers. Here's what he said. It's simple. Not one more election should be held under the gerrymandered maps we have now, and we must have new maps in place before the next election. Period. Period, Dom, when you type out period and then you put a period.
What? No,
you know, caps, you're serious.
Exclamation points.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court announced Friday, October 27th, that it had recently voted to accept three new cases, including Clark versus Wisconsin Elections Commission, the lawsuit filed against the WEC claiming the state's current legislative maps, which determine the districts represented in the Wisconsin state legislature, are unconstitutional, Dom, because they violate the Wisconsin state constitution separation of powers doctrine and should be redrawn.
Yes, Crudy, I concur. Channel 3000 goes on. The case centers on the claim that the majority of the current districts, 54 of 99 in the Assembly and 21 of 33 in the Senate, are illegal because they are not contiguous.
Don't get Mark from the sack on.
Man, Mark's been preaching this from day one. The lawsuit also asks the Supreme Court to force every member of the state legislature, 132 members between the Assembly and Senate, to be up for re-election at the same time under new maps. The brief filed by Evers and Call on Monday expressed support for those arguments. A quote, "The meaning of contiguous is clear. It requires physical connection. Historical evidence supports this, including the original rationales behind the contiguity requirement to prevent gerrymandering and create districts with uniform needs. Wisconsin's maps should be revamped to make legislative districts contiguous, conforming with constitutional districting requirements and enhancing the democratic power of voters," the response says. Brief also argues the previous court, which held a 4-3 conservative majority before Justice Janet Protasiewicz won her election by double-digit margin in April, made a mistake in their redistricting decision that implemented a map proposal that had already been vetoed by Evers. Another quote, "It supercharged the legislature's power at the expense of the governor's and court's own constitutional roles in the redistricting process," the governor's brief argues. "Under these unique circumstances, the court's decisions stretch the Wisconsin's constitution separation of powers architecture beyond its permissible bounds. The Wisconsin Supreme Court has set oral arguments on the case for November 21.
Looking forward to that date. Red letter day on my calendar, Dom.
Like 3 weeks, dude.
3 weeks. Not soon enough. It's just been like 10 years coming, this lawsuit.
And why would it take this long? You know, if you look at the
makeup. This is the makeup of the court prior.
Well, I mean, come on, man. I mean, contiguous is contiguous, right? You could literally see like little spots that are like separated from the district it claims to represent, you know, all the way around. There's space around it. You can see very evident in the maps that there are areas that are not contiguous. You know, full stop. I mean, what else do you need? They got to be contiguous. They're not. Okay, they're bad. Just throw them out, redo them. And how could you even approve maps that don't meet the requirement? Are you kidding me?
Well, like, not only that, the separation of powers aspect of this lawsuit, Dom, is because Governor Tony Evers vetoed these very specific maps from the legislature. In fact, the Wisconsin Supreme Court on first ruling said Governor Tony Evers' maps, although they still favored the Republicans at that time, Dom, they were the least changed maps, right? The Republicans wanted the least changed maps because that baked the prior gerrymander into the cake. The 10 years prior, we started from there. And then you got to do the least change. And Evers had those. He vetoed the legislative maps. And then they were forced to institute vetoed maps, which is where the separation of powers issues constitutionally comes in under this lawsuit as well. So there are a couple of good rationales, Dom. I think very strong rationales. Lack of contiguous districts and separation of powers in that Evers vetoed the very maps that were instituted here. I think we're on to something, Dom.
3 weeks from tomorrow, oral arguments will begin in the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
I wonder how quickly we would get a ruling. This year? I think it would be this year. I think we would know. Especially if they think they're going to run it up the flagpole of the federal courts,
well,
right?
Yeah, man. I mean, time is of the essence, obviously. We got, you know, elections never stop. We've been dealing with this for a long time. So kudos to Evers and AG Call. Good luck on all of that. I cannot wait for this to be argued out in court.
Dominic, we've got more Evers news. Governor Evers being featured in the headline over at the Journal Sentinel at this hour. Evers cast doubt on bill addressing PFAS, calls it questionable. Governor Tony Evers, this reporting from Laura Schulte over at the Journal Sentinel. Governor Tony Evers says he may veto a bill aiming at supporting communities struggling with forever chemicals if some provisions are not reworked or removed. Here is what he says. It does not hold anybody accountable. It takes away the powers and authority of the DNR. I'm concerned the Department of Natural Resources has, I think, a somewhat limited ability to deal with this issue. And to hamstring on this issue, which is probably the most important issue that they need to be working on, that doesn't make any sense. When asked if he plans to sign the PFAS bill, if it makes it to his desk, Evers didn't commit either way. I don't know. It's questionable. It remains to be seen. Evers did note there are parts of the bill he supports, such as getting money to communities struggling with PFAS. The PFAS bill, if approved by the governor, would create grant programs aimed at providing aid to communities with contamination, in addition to limiting the actions of the Department of Natural Resources could take to address contamination or hold the polluters accountable. Well, why would we want to do that, Tom? A little bit more here. What am I looking for? Here's a quote from the Save Our Water Group, an advocacy group. To say the authors didn't listen to the residents impacted by PFAS contamination across Wisconsin does not begin to describe how they kowtowed to corporate interests and their apologists while locking their constituents out of their deliberations. Yeah, I'd say that about covers.
Yeah, that's a Republican bill. I mean, that's exactly what they do. Oh, you got a PFAS problem? Tax breaks. And shield the, you know, folks that are what responsible for it.
You know, I saw it on Facebook this weekend. The Green Bay Bears. Is it getting that bad? Is it that bad? It's pretty damn close. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocate. This show never sucks. At least in our humble opinion. Come back. Be a part. 844-967-2789. John Nichols joining very, very soon.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
And we're back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Feel free to join us, 844-967-2789. John Nichols is going to join us at the bottom of the hour.
Dom, a couple of interesting messages here on the text line. Matt from Germantown texted, Skull! I think that's a dig on all us Packer fans. Here's another one. WMDX, West from Middleton, texts in, Bucks laid an egg at the Fiserv Forum last night, too.
Ooh, yeah.
But Flavor Flav brought the house down with the national anthem, though. Did he?
What?
I got one more text, and then we're going to give you a little taste of the Flavor Flav at the Fiserv last night, Dom. Here is what your pal Jeff from Sherwood had to say. Come on, Crudy, be better. There are several Big Ten teams to hate. Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin hockey swept former number one Minnesota. I knew that. Just open a bottle of wine so I can handle Dom. We've all done a little day drinking around Dom through the years, Jeff.
Glad I can be here for you guys.
Now, you didn't hear Flavor.
No, I haven't. I've seen, you know, the headlines, and I just did not dig into it because, whatever. But apparently, man, some people liked it. Some people were kind of not too happy about it. So I'm anxious to hear it.
Well, I've seen him as sort of the hype guy, and we've seen him in concert. We saw what? Chuck D and Flavor Flav. We saw Public Enemy at Summerfest, you and I.
Yeah,
and Flavor Flav was walking through the crowd on somebody's shoulders and almost fell off, and I had to give him my hand, and I held on to him. And I got him through and he said, yeah, boy.
Yeah, he did.
You know how he does. So anyways, Dom, in case you missed it, here is Flavor Flav singing the national anthem karaoke style.
At the twilight last gleaming, who cross stripes and bright stars.
It is my opinion the Milwaukee Bucks did not want to win last night. They threw that game, man. That national anthem cost them the ball game. Hawks lit them up last night.
Well, not having Middleton might have helped not help them as well. But Flavor Flav, that's it. That's the only sample we got. Okay. So, I mean, I don't know.
He's got the whole 2.5 minute song. We can play it off for you, Doug.
He's making an effort, man. I mean, it sounds like he's actually trying to sing the song. So yeah, man, go Flav. What's the problem, Crudy? What are the haters hating on?
Well, pretty much the fact that he's not a very good singer. You realize this, right? You can hear the flatness of the tone. I've heard you sing.
I'm not a very good singer either, so I don't know what you mean by that. He has a mic, and he's singing. Sounds like he's a singer to me.
Can I make one other pop cultural reference I learned over the weekend, Dom?
Sure, man.
I was watching, what was it? The Saturday Night Live cold open. And I didn't even know who the comedian was, but I found him to be quite funny. But during the cold open, they did a little expose on new speaker Mike Johnson. And I did not realize, but speaker Mike Johnson has an adopted black son that he doesn't talk about. And they encouraged us to look it up. So I did. I Googled in real time, you know, during the cold open. They're like, and who's this? Well, that's Mike Johnson's black son. He never talks about, except when he analogizes, it's kind of like the blind side. Well, if you recall, Dom, the folks, not the people that made the movie, but the folks involved in The Blind Side had been accused of sort of, let's just say, making false representation about whether or not they actually adopted this kid. And apparently Johnson also hasn't adopted the kid because, you know, it's complicated. But he describes this adult black male as his son and just claims, you know, they just never got around to adopting him. Here is a brief telling of the story from the Daily Beast. This is a real story. New House Speaker Mike Johnson says it was the choice of his adopted, air quotes, black son Michael to keep a low profile, right down to his absence from the congressional bio and the family photos. Like, no, he didn't want to be included in the family.
I mean, Scott Walker's love child, allegedly, you know, isn't really been poking around her head up about claiming to be Walker's kid. So, you know, it's not unheard of that a child or adopted child may not be, you know, fans of their quote-unquote parents.
I think this is more like the Matt Gaetz and the Cabana Boys situation, Dom. Here's a quote. At the time of the speaker's election to Congress, Michael was an adult with a family of his own, Johnson spokesperson Corrine Dave said. He has to not be involved in their public life. Can you understand why? I mean, if you were Mike Johnson's kid, adopted or otherwise, would you be claiming the man? Especially if, like, you were his black son that he probably doesn't acknowledge publicly.
I would say this, though. I haven't heard Mike Johnson, and of course, I've been in the news a whole lot recently, haven't heard anything about him referring to any of his other children. So, you know, black adopted or not adopted child or not, I haven't heard him talk about his kids at all.
Oh, he talked about him right on the... Are you kidding me, dude? This was part of his opening speech.
No, I missed it.
When he was newly elected speaker, he like literally talked about his wife and kids. And that's, if I recall, the only reason why Mark Pocan knew the guy was married and had kids. Because he mentioned him during his speech. A little bit more. According to Johnson's spokesperson, he, Michael, the black son they don't talk about, as to not be involved in the new public life, the speaker has respected that sentiment throughout his career and maintains a close relationship with Michael to this day. They just don't talk about it. Johnson has said he took in Michael when he was a teen and raised him as a member of the family. and he has mentioned him in discussions of race, including his opposition to reparations. You know, because having a black son makes him oppose the idea that, you know, the deck was stacked against the black kids. And liken their relationship to the blind side. Because that's worked out so well for all parties concerned on that relationship. Dave said Michael, who's now 40, was not formally adopted because the process was difficult.
What? So did you claim him on your taxes? I mean, did you... I mean, are you kidding me? I just don't understand. I mean, how were you a legal guardian? Was it recognized whatsoever? Who enrolled him in school? You know what I mean? I mean, what? It's just, I don't know, man. I hate to like, and I get the references, you know, young Christian Republicans, you know, adopting teenage boys kind of storyline. I mean, I get that, but I don't want to go there, man. I don't know. I mean, there are good people out there that want to do good things for other folks. But it seems a little sketch to me.
Does it seem sketchy at all that Speaker Johnson is 51 years old and the reported black son that he talks about often, occasionally, never, and doesn't include in the family bio or any photos, is 11 years his junior? Meet my son. He's 40. Two.
Right. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, at the time, you're like a 25-year-old adult male and you're
raising a 15-year-old?
But not adopting? Just keeping around the house?
Well, the adoption part, that takes some effort, Dom.
I thought they were the rule of law party, man.
Well, that only comes in when you start talking about the impeachment of Joe Biden.
Oh, okay. Thank
Johnson
you.
Did that with Maria Bartiromo earlier today. You know, we're the law and order party.
Yeah.
Unless it gets difficult, that process. Come back, John Nichols. Our friend and fine guest joins us next. Fight the power. We've got to
fight the power. The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Big Monday My Football Team Sucks edition. Got a fine guest, though. John Nichols from the Nation, from the Cap Times locally. John, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates.
Hey, John.
It's great to be with you. Good to be with both of you.
Well, I won't linger on the football small talk today, John. It's not worth talking about. Let's leave it at that, John. Let me ask you. I saw a piece at the Cap Times you published today. The new speaker tried to reject Wisconsin's votes. Hell, nearly the entire Republican congressional delegation from Wisconsin would have turned back all Wisconsin voters. We know that Trump would have, but John, why do you pick on this Mike Johnson guy?
He seems so nice. Mike Johnson, it was chosen because no one had ever heard of him. Right. And so the theory was that the Republicans could foist a guy who looked like, you know, like the dad in a situation comedy on America, and everybody would be like, oh, that's cool. But unfortunately, this dad in the situation comedy is, you know, an aggressive, extreme right-wing lawyer who served as Donald Trump's point man in Congress for efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election, particularly to reject the Electoral College votes from Wisconsin and a number of other states in an effort basically to keep Donald Trump in office as the illegitimate president of the United States. And, you know, when you look at the record, here's the really unsettling reality. Mike Johnson was more a part of the efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election than Jim Jordan. And we all thought, wow, Jim Jordan, that'd be a pretty extreme Speaker of the House. The fact of the matter is that when it comes to issues of democracy, Mike Johnson is more anti-democratic, more extreme than most of his colleagues. And that doesn't even get started on his social policies.
Well, before we talk about his social policies, John Nichols from The Nation, from the Cap Times. I saw Joe Scarborough the other morning, and he said in part that Donald Trump opposed the Tom Emmer nomination as a speaker candidate because Emmer actually stood up and said, no, Biden won the election. Now, Johnson had no such qualms, as you've mentioned, but Scarborough thought that this was an effort to basically put a Manchurian candidate in place as Speaker of the House. John, do you have this concern that somehow the Electoral College could be thrown back to the House of Representatives and somehow Johnson could work some voodoo magic and reinstall Trump?
Well, they're not going to reinstall Trump. I mean, you're talking about the 2024 election now, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, we're in play on the next electoral cycle. And there's a couple of steps that you have to go through to get there. Number one, Republicans have to retain control of the House of Representatives in 2024 because the new House is sworn in 3 days before they review the Electoral College results. And so that's step one. But if you had a situation where the Republicans retain control of the House and Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the House, you would have a person in charge of that chamber who has already shown an absolute willingness to reject the legitimately cast votes of tens of millions of people in the United States in order to preserve the political possibilities, preserve the political trajectory of Donald Trump. So, yeah, would you be concerned about that? You should be. And then, frankly, you might also want to be a little concerned about the fact that Mike Johnson is now second in the line of succession to the presidency of the United States. So, yeah, there's a, you know, if you want anything to keep you awake at night in these troubled times, that might help.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's our pal John Nichols with the Cap Times and with the Nation magazine. John, over the weekend, I believe perhaps it was yesterday, Judge Chutkan reinstated the gag order she put on Donald Trump. We know the other judge has fined him, what, five and then another 10 for a total of $15,000 for violating that one. While I certainly appreciate the efforts to, you know, at least make a mark, how do you think this is going to play out? I mean, Donald Trump, you know, took no time to continue to attack people he shouldn't be attacking. How do you think this plays out the next couple of months as the heat gets turned on? Donald Trump, hell, his kid's going to testify this week.
Yeah, I know. And we're going to see how good a dad he was, I guess, and how much loyalty there is there. And remember, during, you know, the aftermath of the 2020 election, his kids weren't exactly full-on supporters, right? There was some evidence that they were a little bit unsettled by their father's actions, at least his daughter. So be that all said, look, this is the challenge of having a president, former president, with 91 felony indictments running for president again. So you've got this weird situation where Trump is supposed to be accepting the rule of law, accepting the requirements of being a defendant in major court cases, you know, four major court cases at least, and several other ancillary ones, at a time when his defense is kind of falling apart. So he's in a bad circumstance there, but he's also running for president, and he is the front-running Republican candidate for president by far. And so your question is, would Trump possibly, you know, settle down and shut up, right? Be quiet in such a situation? And the answer is no, he won't, right? I mean, he's not going to do that. And I mean, I would tell you from a political standpoint, his approach is the right one, right? I mean, he's running for president of the United States. He can't stand down. He needs to constantly defend his position, defend, you know, himself. And his brand is as somebody who, you know, makes wild accusations, says whatever comes into his mind. That's who he is. It's what he does. So that's not going to change. The question really is whether the court cases catch up on him, right? Whether he ends up in a situation where these cases move more quickly than some people anticipated, and he actually starts facing convictions, not charges, and not, you know, sitting in the courtroom, but actually being convicted. And that's where it becomes, you know, a much more difficult situation for Trump, because once you're convicted, then you're much deeper into the legal process than he is now. Now he's in the process to the point of having fines and a lot of difficult days. If he is in fact convicted on some of these charges, he faces the prospect of going to jail.
John, I got to jump in here. When Mike Johnson was elected, I think Trump was the first to greet him as MAGA Mike Johnson. And I would point out that the entire Wisconsin Republican delegation was just fine with MAGA Mike Johnson, except, of course, for Van Orden, who was on his own fact-finding mission to Israel. Apparently, very important stuff he's doing. But, John, every single one of them's okay with an election denier as Speaker of the House.
And, in fact, a denier of Wisconsin's votes. I mean, that's the critical thing. If he was trying to throw out the votes in Illinois, that's another thing, right? You know, we might, you know, philosophically disagree with that. But he's actually trying to throw out your votes. You know, and you would think that Wisconsin representatives, at least some of them, might be a little ill at ease with that. They might say, you know, I just don't think this is a good fit, right, to have a guy who actually tried to overturn the results of the election by disenfranchising, you know, 3.2 million Wisconsinites. And yet they did. That's what they did. And I just want to say, you know, Derek Van Orden, you know full well that he would have voted with him, because Derek Van Orden never thinks for himself, except apparently at midnight in the Capitol Rotunda.
Well, that was just the booze thinking, John, probably.
Well, I don't know that. I can't testify to that.
I threw a probably in there, John. I got you covered.
Allegedly, perhaps, some people are saying, John.
Yeah, you sounded like Fox News now.
John, here's what I can tell you. We were in D.C. last week, my wife and I, and she had an advocacy meeting with Van Orden staff at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time. And the boss was back because his suitcase was in the office. He travels pretty heavy when he goes to the Middle East, she said. But they offered her a beer at 10:30 in the morning, John.
You are not. You're kidding me.
I kid you not.
Oh, man. Well, you know, there's a part of me that really thinks that's probably not a good fit. But, you know, on the other hand, he is from Wisconsin. And he's apparently the funny thing about Van Orden is, he thinks, as a non-Wisconsinite, right? You know, he's somebody who's not from Wisconsin. He thinks this is who we are, that we drink at 10:30 or 9:30 in the morning. And the thing he needs to understand is that we only do that on game day.
And only if our team's got a better chance of winning than we did against Ohio State the other night. John.
But, you know, what I'm saying is his schedule is off. And that's, I think, in part because he's not from Wisconsin.
You want to hear the worst crime of all, John? It was a Molson Coors product. He didn't even offer a Wisconsin beer. Nothing made in the third.
No, not Leinenkugel?
No, sir.
I mean, it could be all Leinenkugel.
You would think they make that in his district.
Does he know it's brewed in Western Wisconsin?
I cannot speak for the congressman. He has spent most of his time recently in Israel, and I didn't get a face-to-face, John. But
I understand.
We appreciate I was just going to say, I appreciate you answering the call on short notice, John. Let me ask you about the future of the House of Representatives. Now it's time to govern, right? Are they going to govern, John, or are they going to shut her down?
Well, no, this is the interesting thing about Mike Johnson. He might not go for a shutdown. We'll see how that sorts out. But you see, Johnson has bigger fish to fry. I mean, this is a guy who really is a very detail-oriented, militant right-winger. And so I think that what you have to watch for him is not merely the kind of low-grade shutdown politics, which always ends up getting sorted out as bad as things are, but keep an eye on him for really trying to mess with aspects of the budget as regards, you know, funding for any kind of reproductive rights, funding for, you know, LGBTQ community, funding for a host of other things, which he has a very long record of opposing. And so, in a weird kind of way, you have to keep a closer eye on Mike Johnson than you did on, say, Kevin McCarthy. Because, frankly, I think Johnson is smarter. And I also think Johnson is more deeply ideological. And so I think you're going to see a lot of things going on in the House that are unsettling. And you're going to see it in these efforts to censure Democratic members like, you know, Rashida Tlaib and others. You're going to see all kinds of political positioning that uses the House as a hammer politically. And that may not get to the shutdown point, or it may. I don't, you know, that's up for grabs. But this is going to be a roller coaster ride with Mike Johnson, because although he is an unknown figure largely, and although he is, you know, again, seemingly mild mannered, every bit of his record suggests that he is an extreme right wing strategist. He is somebody who is going to bring a very active agenda to the House, and, you know, is going to use every tool he's got to advance that agenda. So keep an eye on him, brother. This is going to be a ride.
John Nichols from The Nation, Cap Times, last 60 seconds, sir. How does Mike Johnson, the new speaker, has hit, how does his path differ at all from McCarthy? I mean, doesn't he operate under the same rules? Sooner or later, that party's going to splinter. How do you think he plays that off?
I think Mike Johnson's much closer to the extreme right and to some of the wilder players than McCarthy ever was. And Johnson, frankly, is far more engaged in a lot of ways. One thing to note is that Matt Gaetz, after McCarthy prevailed, or after Johnson prevailed in the speakership race, said, "We won the speakership." And so I don't think he's going to have as much trouble from the right. The place where he might end up in a little bit of trouble is with the handful of members who are worried about getting reelected in 2024.
Well, they're all on the ballot, John.
I know,
all got
some
problem.
Of them don't have hard races. Some don't have hard races. Quickly,
John, do you think there's an electoral price to pay for this chaos? Like 30 seconds, my friend.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a price. And I think that depends on the Democrats. If the Democrats figure out how to talk about it, particularly President Biden, I think they can hang it on the Republicans. But you can't just expect people to remember things a year from now. You have to talk about it and be very pointed in what you complain about.
John, I am always pointed in my complaints. Thank you, friend, for coming around.
Well, thanks, John. Yeah, you know, my condolences as regards your teams.
Yes, sir. I can always pick new teams. I can be fair weather like Dom. Come back, more Devil's Advocates. Thanks, John Nichols.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
We're back right before listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. You can always join us on the lines at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to thank our most recent guests. Always love it when John Nichols comes around. Thank you, John. And I'm coming around this Saturday night, Walworth County. Little fundraiser for the Walworth County Dems. I am part of a great speaking platform. They include Sarah Godlewski, Greta Neubauer, and Melissa Agard and Crudy, somewhere on the list. I didn't even get a picture, but, you know, I don't want to break the camera or anything. But where is it? Lake Lawn Resort, Delavan, Wisconsin. And the event starts at 5 and it runs till 9. Heavy hors d'oeuvres. Hors d'oeuvres. I can't even say it.
Hors d'oeuvres?
Hors d'oeuvres. Yeah. Hors d'oeuvres. Listen to me.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres. And I believe cocktails.
Oh, there'll be food, Crudy.
It is a fundraiser, and they're selling tickets and tables and the whole shebang. Figure about $75, but it's for a very good cause. It is the 1 year to win Gala 2023, Walworth County. Come down to Delavan. That's a Wanker's old stomping grounds. Isn't it down there? I heard he ran track. Yeah. A little bit of sad news for a liberal activist sort, might need a little fundraiser of his own, Dom. Dan Bice reporting at this hour on the Journal Sentinel, the Minocqua Brewing Company owner, Kirk Bankstead, ordered to pay $750,000 in the state's largest libel judgment ever. Ever. Let me read a little of Bice's coverage here. It's not on the page 6, it's the Journal Sentinel. A conservative Wisconsin newspaper publisher is no doubt hoisting a cold one to a local jury that has ordered a brewery-owning liberal activist to pay $750,000 in the state's largest defamation judgment. Now, James Friedman, the attorney for the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, said the previous record for a libel suit in Wisconsin was $450,000. I guess that's inflation for you, Dom. There were two such cases, Friedman said. One in 1992, against the Milwaukee Sentinel and a more recent one over a book claiming the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting never happened. So this went down with the local Alex Jones level case. Here is what Friedman, an attorney for Godfrey and Kahn, said. I'm quite certain there's never been like a $1 million verdict in Wisconsin in a defamation case. So I think this is the biggest, On Friday, an Oneida County jury took only 3 hours, including a lunch break, to order Minocqua Brewing Company owner Kirk Bankstead to pay the $750,000 judgment for defaming Lakeland Times publisher Greg Walker and post on the brewery's popular social media outlets. Among other things, the 13-member jury found Bankstead had smeared Walker by calling him a crook and a misogynist. Bankstead, who operates a federal super PAC, also was found to have defamed Walker by claiming in a Facebook post that he had engaged in elder abuse of his father and may have let his 23-year-old brother bleed to death in a hunting accident so he could inherit the newspaper business. That's an unsavory detail. Under the jury verdict, Bankstead and his brewery are to pay $320,000 in compensatory damages, and Bankstead is to pay $430,000 in punitive damages out of his own pocket for the Facebook post about Walker's deceased brother and father. The jury concluded Bankstead acted with malice with the August 22nd, 2022 post. Bankstead, who ran unsuccessfully as a Democrat for the Assembly in 2020, declined to discuss the case. The Lakeland Times editorial page is conservative. I'll talk to the Journal Sentinel, but I would prefer not to talk to you, Bankstead said. recently, when asked state Supreme Court a new liberal majority to eliminate funding for the state's four taxpayer-funded school voucher programs and independent charter schools. And Kirk is vowing to appeal the verdict.
Here's what he says on Facebook. He said he would appeal the jury verdict. Quote, I have to trust that Wisconsin's judicial system, its appellate system in particular, will ultimately be just in this case. I have to believe that. Have to believe this because I still believe in America, Wisconsin, and our institutions. And years ago, before Donald Trump, Tucker Carlson, Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, and Fox News, our institutions, because they were strong and trusted by our citizens, were the envy of the world, unquote. On Friday, he put it more bluntly, attacking Oneida County Circuit Judge Leon Stenz. The long and short of it is this Oneida County judge had it in for us. Matthew Fernholz, an attorney for Walker, said he was pleased with the jury's conclusions. We feel like it was a solid jury verdict. It should be upheld. What's interesting about this case, Bice writes at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, in addition to the amount of the jury verdict, is the role of the newspaper in this case. Usually a paper is a target of a libel suit, not the one bringing it. I'm not recalling a newspaper or other news outlet suing someone for defamation, said Kathleen Bartson-Culver, an associate journalism professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Nothing is leaping to my mind. Man bites dog, Crudy. You don't see this very often. Bankstead vowing to appeal a $750,000 verdict. Whew.
Oof, indeed. Troubling times may end that super PAC, may end his pursuits as a businessman in the state of Wisconsin. And I don't know if I would take the legal tact, and it bothers me a little bit, I got to tell you, of attacking the judge. It sounds very Trumpian to me. Oh, it's the jurisdiction. It's the judge.
Well, I mean, those things do happen. I mean, look at the Kenosha shooter. What's his name? Kyle Rittenhouse. I mean, the judge down there, I mean, played a big part, I believe, in the outcome of that case.
Did also the jury of 13? Are they to be also personally vilified?
Well, I mean, but the judge, sure, but the judge can, you know, dictate what comes in and comes out. You know, those kinds of decisions are made by the judge. And again, I don't know the details of this particular Bankstead case, but certainly I would be critical. I am critical of the judge in the Rittenhouse case. So,
they're not analogous at all. And I am very familiar with the facts of this case. I've been paying attention, and I don't think it's warranted.
Judges have input on cases. That is a fact, Purdy.
Yes, they do. as do the plaintiffs and the defendants. And sometimes people are guilty. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates, a happier happy hour, the Monday edition, 844-967-2789. You can always be a part. Share your story with us. Don't have to share your dollars. Not today.
Not today.
If we're going out drinking on Halloween, though, we may ask. But that'd be tomorrow.